Mac and Sonia Dillon. Everyone, you're welcome. Thanks for preparing the original submission and also the extra evidence that you wrote in advance of the hearing. It's very helpful to us because we've had a chance to read it, so you don't need to reread it to us.
Yep.
But you're very welcome to speak to that material and highlight key points for us, and then we'll see if we have any questions for you.
Righto. Well, as in my submission, we've mentioned about mapping all the drainage. Our farm has a super extensive range of tile drains and mould drains, and it's not actually on there, but this, if we had to map every mould of the whole farm, I might just colour the whole farm because it is completely mould.
Which you've got a picture further down which shows one paddock.
Which has been mould drained.
Done, yeah.
The time and energy it would take in for us, well, that, see in the paint bed, that's drain ploughing, hill, and the whole farm would just be like that, just up and back every 1.5 metres.
Yeah.
And it's very extensive. Yeah, mapping the tiles, well, we know a fair portion of them are, but it's still after 20 years, I'm still finding tiles on the farm that I didn't know were there. So the time and energy it would take to go into mapping all them, I think it'd just be unproductive waste of time.
And that's with him actively looking for them as well. He wants to know where they are and hasn't found them.
Mm.
But I do support the mapping of new tile drains, or if you're maintaining one, if you can mark it on your map.
Yeah.
So on that, the stock exclusion one, I agree with removing cattle, but I disagree from keeping sheep out of waterways. We've got the Waimea stream, and on our side we graze sheep under the hot water, and it leaves the anglers access and keeps the gorse down and long grass. On the other side, the dairy farm, it's gorse and broom higher than the fence, and there's no access for fishermen or duck shooters or anything like that. And just our banks, just tidy copses, were not overgrown. Far easier to manage, and save someone on a flood, stuff like that, the water can get away rather than trying to destroy the bank. Onto the winter grazing, the limit, I don't think it's fair. I don't know how you come up with the idea of 50 hectares. You get a large land holding, you can't even graze enough of your own stock, let alone if you want to add a few more. And I think a percentage of your land holding would be a far more sensible idea, and yeah, make it reasonable so guys don't have to push the limits. So there's a wee bit of leeway each way. It just comes back to good management, which 99% of us do nowadays. And probably moving on to the feed, the limit of one feed pad per farm. With, as I've said, our farm's a real heavy soil type. We learned years ago that damaging our soil cost us money. And yeah, so we've put farming practices in place to lift the crop and take them to areas on the farm which is sustainable and good for stock health, to feed the beet out in the tree blocks. Utilisation's far more improved. The feed, they don't need as much tucker, and it's not destroying the farm and not pugging tiles and, or moles and clay, and it's just ongoing. And it's a sort of a farming practice that's getting more and more adopted around the country, whether it's sheds or other scenarios. And getting onto the mapping of the soil types. Supposedly old Matera is free draining. We've got places at home, we've dug holes 10 metres deep and we've found clay 10 metres deep and supposedly old Matera. So the science behind the mapping, there needs to be more homework done on that because it's totally irrelevant. Well, it's not proven science, which we need a proven science. This saying you've got this soil type on your farm is very detrimental to the value of your farm, and for future generations, whether they succession planning, whether they would think that they need to convert the farm or do change to different farming practices, and they've got a small proportion on this, it's going to be very detrimental to the value of the farm. And onto the farm plan, we oppose that. We've got that much compliance and stuff we need to do nowadays for selling stock or bringing ferret, spraying, it's never ending. Yeah, as I said, 99% of us are good farmers and we already have good farm management practices in place. The writing of this document, it costs, I know, $4,000 to $5,000 in the time and work involved going towards this document. I don't think it's a good use of time. That's just what we wanted to highlight in our submission.
That's very good. Shall we see if we have questions for you now?
Yep.
Good morning. Just in your evidence, you mentioned his farms subdivide in the future. Subsequent farms will have 50 hectare limits. What do you mean?
Well, I'd say if you stick with your 50 hectare limit, we can divide the farm up. 300 hectare farm, he divides it in thirds, then he can grow 150 hectares, or want to grow 150 hectares, where currently he can only do 50.
Oh, is that what you meant?
Yeah.
So it just meant that, you know, the footprint going forward is going to end up worse when you're sticking to a 50 hectare limit, whereas if it was a percentage of land holding, subdivisions which are getting more and more common, you know, you're not creating a bigger problem.
Right, I understand what you're saying there. You turn to harvesting, farming, I think, and feeding it out on wintering pads. So you had trouble with feeding it in the paddock?
Oh, they just turned the paddock to soup, and then getting that paddock back into the crop the following season was an issue too.
So the surface runoff was horrendous. Like, everything about it was bad. Like, it wasn't a good system on air ground type. So
that's why we adopted to harvesting it.
Which is why we disagree with limiting the number of feed pads, and the number of animals. Like, if you can have more feed pads, you can put less animals per feed pad and spread the load out without. So currently, we could go back to the old practice without spending money on consent, and we're making a hell of a mess doing it that way, whereas doing it the way we see benefits to the animal health and the paddocks is going to cost us money.
Yeah, that's very clear. How many feed pads do you have or see as desirable?
Well, it's not a clear definition. I was reading the other day. Our pads are up from 3 to 4 hectares, and in each of those pads we have a certain amount of animals, so they get 3 a year to wear them around, and then the bases they feed against.
And we've got three currently.
Three of those.
So the actual pads or...
Well, it depends on which definition you look at. So the original document didn't have a great definition, so we would have thought they were a feed pad. The Section 42, we probably don't fall into it because of the large area that we're using.
It's a fenced off area of a paddock.
It's a paddock, essentially, paddock that we've chosen as a suitable site to feed our winter crops on.
There's two of them with tree blocks. They're in trees, and then there's the third one is 24 acres of tree stumps. It was harvested trees. So they're only on that block for 14 weeks. Over all the rest of the time, it's left in pasture to regrow. It's standing hay, really. So there's and only the whole nutrient loading for a period over the winter, then all summer has the trees to uptake the nutrients or the grass to uptake the nutrients that we transfer to that block.
If you were to put in what the Section 42A definition of a feed pad, and would that be a problem?
I don't think it would be a problem, but I don't know that we are a feed pad in that definition because of our area. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm interested in where you got the figure of $4,000 to $5,000 for a farm environment management plan.
We got that from a Federated Farmers meeting that we went to, and they were discussing this document, the original document, and they quoted those numbers.
So they didn't give you any background as to what those costs might be. That's a pulled out of the air figure, or did they give you any
substance? Well, that was a breakdown of what Overseer was costing and the time. I guess they were putting a value on time, and they thought it would take approximately 40 years for a lot of farmers to put that together to come up with that sum.
Yeah. And the other question I've got is a practical one. I'm wondering how you avoid mould rain damage when you're carting heavy loads of fodder beet to your feed beds.
Well, the farms were extensively laned, and we do it when it's not wet. Like 2 weeks ago, we're harvesting in the frost.
Yeah. Okay, cool.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Lloyd?
Yes, my only comment really is around consents. You don't like consents, don't want consents.
I just don't see why you pay for a consent for what's good practice, where you can go back to a poorer practice and it costs you nothing consent-wise.
I understand that, but if there was a very clear pathway for a consent around some very particular, I'm thinking particular winter grazing or some other activities, so not a general farm consent, but very targeted consent, and you knew exactly what it was. You mentioned in here that you've taken 50 hectares as a limit.
Yes.
That's actually a number where you would actually go to a consent process. And there's been other submissions that have basically said, well, some see that as of value and some don't see that as of value. So we're just trying to work out whether that process is actually part of the problem and can we get some clarity. So I'd just like your views on that.
As far as getting a consent when you exceed a limit, no, I don't really have a problem with that, and neither does Mark, I don't think. And as long as the cost is low, and like you said, there's steps that's clear to everyone so that it can be put through, that's fine. The 50 hectare number, we still obviously have an issue with that in the first place, but if it was 25% or 35% and we wanted 40, then yeah, we're fine with consent for the extremes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Just reading through or going through the evidence that you provided, and thanks again for doing that. I'm looking at paragraph 13. And it's the issue of the mapping of the drains. A lot of submitters have said to us, look, it's a bit difficult to map existing drains because we don't even know where they are. So we understand that point and we're giving some serious thought to that. But other submitters have said, hey, but it's okay to map the outlets of drains as opposed to mapping the locations of the drains and the paddocks themselves. Do you have a view on that?
Well, we haven't found them all over the lease block.
No.
We've got a lease property across the road.
Yeah.
There you can't really see. And like I said, we look for the tiles, mm-hmm. and we've got a map, but we still stumble across the odd outlet that is not anywhere where we expected. And again, I think there's outlets that we haven't stumbled across yet, so it'd be good if we could, but I don't know that it's that reasonable to expect that it could be done perfectly.
Yeah.
We don't have a problem with mapping all these tiles and outlets, as long as it's not used against us for a water quality issue.
Yeah, I understand that. Paragraph 16, where you're talking about the intent of winter grazing, and from the answer you gave to an earlier question, I'm pretty sure that you do understand that the 50 hectares is not an absolute limit, it's a threshold above which consent would be required, and that you do understand that. And I think you said, look, you wouldn't mind getting a consent in what you called an extreme situation, so you understand that, okay. The point you make in paragraph 17 about feed pads, again, I don't really have a question, but just wanted to let you know that a number of submitters have raised this issue. They say to us, look, feed pads are actually beneficial, so why are you making our life hard to put feed pads in when they actually do environmental benefits? So we're well aware and we're alive to that issue. So I just wanted to kind of give you some comfort that that submission that you make is a commonly made one, and it's certainly not falling on deaf ears.
Cool.
And the rule that controls feed pads has a raft of environmentally based conditions, and if you comply with those, people are saying, why does it matter how many feed pads you have? And we're certainly understanding that message. So. And finally, you talked about farm environment plans, how you thought they might be a little bit onerous for you. We've heard already from Beef and Land New Zealand, they came and submitted to the hearing and they were promoting the land environment plans that they do. And other submitters have come along and said they've done the beef and lamb environment plans, and there's three levels of them, and they've done various levels, and they found them to be hugely beneficial. Have you been involved in the beef and lamb land environment plan process at all?
No, we haven't done the beef and lamb one. We've had the Environment South, what's his position, come out and help us.
Land Sustainable Officer.
Yes, yeah. He's come out and put that plan together, but we haven't yet done the beef and lamb one.
Is that a farm activity focus plan or a farm environment plan, do you know? How long ago was that?
Not that long ago.
6 months.
Yeah.
Okay. And how did you find that process?
That was good. Highlighted any areas we need to watch or...
And they were mostly areas that we were aware of anyway, so it was a good discussion. It was very good.
They viewed our feed pad situation, what we got set up, and thought it was a good idea.
Yeah. Good. Well, that's the end of my questions, but Commissioner Rodway, who's not here, wrote down some questions that he wants me to ask you, so I'm just going to put them to you. His first question was, do feed pads have adverse effects such as leakage to groundwater or overland flow?
I imagine in some situations they do, but like I said, as probably doesn't technically fall in it, so we don't see the detrimental effects to the level perhaps some feed pads do, because we've got a massive area and we've got trees uptaking a lot, and I don't air system isn't like that. So yes, I could see that they could be, and I think that they're set up to be managed anyway, a lot of them. There's processes and ways of taking effluent away in certain situations, so I think well, a good system isn't...
Yeah, the solid effluent will be carted away and spread along paddocks over the summer.
Right.
I suppose it's a necessary to eat. If we did to leave them on the paddock, it's going to definitely going to be worse for environment on the paddock compared to it is on the tree. Mm. But it's, we've put things in place to stop excessive runoff and extreme weather events. So we're trying to manage it as best as we can.
Okay. I'll just pause a minute. So just to the staff, so that's the first question I've asked for Commissioner Rodway. Just two things in terms of the recording. Did the question come across? Can you tell whether or not the recordings worked?
Yes, it's worked.
Did the question come across sufficiently clear, and did the answer come across sufficiently clear?
Yes, it did.
Okay. Just Commissioner Rodway's going to listen to the recording later on, so I just wanted to make sure he'd be able to understand it. The second question was, if large properties were allowed 35% of their land for winter grazing without a consent, i.e. 1,000 hectares equals 350 hectares of winter grazing, could this result in adverse effects, he asks.
If it wasn't managed properly, I would imagine it would. But if it's well managed, I wouldn't see any issues.
All right. Thank you very much for answering those questions, and thank you very much for coming in. It's been helpful.
Thank you.